You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Yeah, we are just giant babies.
Like, we are just giant ADHD babies. Mm-hmm. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Auto Alex podcast. This is the second ever Auto Alex podcast. I must say that before I introduce our guest, we have a special guest. It's not Taylor. The Auto Alex podcast is doing very well, isn't it, Rory?
It's doing incredibly well. I think we're number 5 in the UK right now.
Yeah.
Top automotive.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Easy. That went straight up there. Yeah. Thank you.
And top in our category, which is leisure for some reason.
Yeah, leisure on Apple.
Automotive comes under leisure, which is a bit weird. Yeah. So.
But the main thing is top 5 UK podcasts.
Yep.
Like out of any podcast.
Yeah. It's mental. It's like, even these ones that I listen to, like Shag Married Annoyed and all this other, like these are big ones.
Apparently Shag Married Annoyed, Rianne, my wife, was telling me that she's even stopped listening because it just got a bit samey, a bit boring.
Oh, well, hopefully we don't do that then.
Oh, no. Well, we will.
Okay.
Yeah, we will. But let's start strong. Let's carry on strong. Anyway, today's guest is a man that goes by the name of, what's your name? It's mate, isn't it?
Hello, mate.
Oh, is it Taylor?
It's Taylor.
It is not. I cannot do that. Sorry.
It is, of course, Mr. Freddy Hernandez, a.k.a. Tavarish. Welcome to the UK.
Hey, how are you?
I'm very well. Yeah, how you doing?
I'm not bad. I went to a really nice show yesterday. Maybe you've heard of it.
Go on.
It's called Shed Fest.
It is called Shed Fest. Yeah. So, you guys listening may know that we've been promoing Shed Fest. It's also the first Auto Alex car show. It's a celebration of shitboxes that we held at the British Motor Museum on Bank Holiday Monday, the 28th of August. And Freddie, it was quite successful, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'd say so. So you had 5,000 tickets available, and how many of those did you sell?
Over 5,000.
You sold over 5,000 tickets?
There were definitely more than 5,000 people.
You think they snuck in?
I think they snuck in.
So I was looking. So apparently you could actually buy a ticket to the museum still. So people were buying tickets to the museum.
Clever.
And then basically going to the museum and then just going to the Shed Fest.
I feel like museum owes you some money now.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah, I'll take my pick of cars. But yeah, Shed Fest, very, very successful. Amazingly, Freddie actually flew over from Florida to come to Shed Fest. I thought you were going to stay here to do stuff, but you were actually flying home tomorrow.
Well, I'm doing stuff now, right?
I know, but you're still doing stuff with us.
Yeah.
But you came here for Shed Fest, so I can't thank you enough.
No, but I really appreciate you, you know, having me here and, you know, letting me be a part of it because I know that it was your first show.
Yep.
It's also like, I want to be with the, you know, UK car culture. I want to learn more about it.
Yep.
And plus, you know, I like hanging out with you.
Cheers, dude. I really appreciate that. And thank you, everyone who came to see us, came to see the team, bought loads of merchandise, listened to us on stage. Mark McCann was there. Mike Brewer was there as well. Daddy Mike Brewer. It was his birthday. We presented him with a nice picture by a really, really exciting new artist called Dan at DJJW Art on Instagram. And Taylor's friend Gina also made Mike a cake, which was very, very
It was
nice.
Very nice.
And, it was so tasty.
Yeah. I didn't have any.
Did you not?
No.
It looks like you had all of it.
Yeah, it does, but you know, unfortunately I didn't have any cake yesterday. Oh. And it's because there were a lot of people there.
Yes. So people said, did you expect this many people to turn up? And I was like, I don't know what 5,000 people looks like.
It's a lot of people.
Until you're on stage and then there are 5,000 people. You're like, shit, that's a lot of people.
It's a sea of people.
I feel like I'm at a concert. I just wanted to get naked and just dive into the crowd.
Well, you still had like a good 20 feet before you hit the crowd. So like, I mean, you would have hit grass.
Oh, that would have hurt. That would actually hurt. Yeah. But it was absolutely fantastic. Shedfest 2024 is going to be bigger and better. Also, you can see the official artwork that we've got there.
They can't.
No, you can't. No. There's artwork. There's artwork. That will be for sale somewhere.
Yeah.
Alex, shut up. That's what I meant. Yeah, you can't see anything.
Okay. I have a question though about Shedfest 2024. Can you pay me double what you paid me now?
Absolutely. Oh, I will double your
fee.
You
know what? Let's go triple.
Oh yeah. No, I'm feeling generous. Okay. Yeah. I'll even buy you two lunches.
Oh, buddy.
Yeah.
Buddy.
Okay. Now I'm talking.
I'm there. You know what? I'm just going to stay here until that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Oh, bloody hell.
Yeah. There you go.
You look very expensive to run.
Is that your announcement that you're moving to your house, please?
No, absolutely not.
Okay. Great.
No. Anyway, Freddie is here. You're going to be flying home tomorrow, day after, and then you are back for Petrol Hedonism Nebworth show that will be out as well. So that's very exciting too.
Yeah, that's going to be good.
So you've got a lot going on, but you've also got other stuff going on your YouTube channel. Before we kind of get into the four questions, what's big in your world at the moment?
Okay, so I bought a 2015 McLaren P1 that had a bit of an oopsie with a flood.
Mm.
It was during a hurricane, so that car is being rebuilt. And when I say rebuilt, it needs absolutely everything. And the car was bought for $2 million 10 days before the storm hit. It had 300 miles on it.
Oh!
It was delivery miles P1, and it was like perfect in every way until, those last 500 yards where it got dragged out of its garage and then went down the street and then ended up on a toilet.
Oh man, that sucks. Can I ask you, how much did you pay for it?
$575,000 American dollars.
And it's a $2 million car?
Yeah.
Dollar.
Yeah, yeah.
And how much are you having to spend on it?
Listen, man, we're just having a good time here. I mean, like,
people want to know.
I don't need that kind of negativity in my life. You know,
is it more than 1,500 quid?
It's maybe. You know, maybe not any more than 3,000. I'd say.
Do you think you will make a profit from selling it?
I will never sell it.
Oh, shut up!
Okay,
never selling.
What if someone came up to you and said, "I'll doubt you around. I'll give you 50 grand right now."
No, it's a car I'm not going to sell because it's first of all, I can never afford one in good condition, and also I love a car with a story.
Yeah,
like story is the most important thing to me. So if I get that one, I think that one is probably the most infamous P1 in the world.
Absolutely, yeah.
Everyone saw that car die on social media. So for me to take that car and then rebuild it, like I can't replicate that at all. Like no amount of money can make me can replicate that. So no, I would never sell it. Also, Who would buy it from me?
There's a lot of people who want to buy a Tavares car.
Nah.
I would, but I would literally give you 1,500 quid.
Okay, well,
Yeah, we can talk.
I'll put you on the list. We'll mark that as a maybe. How about that?
Thank you. All right. Yeah. Should we now get into the actual podcast? Because we've got the formula for the podcast, which is very, very popular. Number 5 in the UK.
Number five, yes.
Okay, well.
So what we're going to do is we're going to break the podcast into kind of four questions, four categories. We're obviously going to be picking Freddie's brain because he's got a very, very nice big brain.
Yeah, big smooth brain.
Big smooth brain.
Yeah.
So shall we get into the first kind of question, first topic, Rory, that we're going to discuss? What is that?
So the first topic, Freddie, is how you became one of the world's biggest car YouTubers.
Good question. Before you start going, in my early days of Car Throttle, I used to read you on Jalopnik and I was like, but Tavares, what even is that name? But I used to read your stuff, and then all of a sudden, like, you've just blown up on YouTube. Like, what happened before Jalopnik? What were you doing?
So it's a funny aside. The first time I actually saw you was when I was doing a Jalopnik press drive. It was with McLaren. We went from Woking to Geneva for the Geneva Auto Show, and I saw you there, and I'm like, well, this guy's he's a big deal. He's not gonna.
Did I ignore you?
No. I think I said hey, and you were like hey, and then you were like, I gotta go.
Why was my voice way higher?
You were like hey,
Hey.
And then you said, I have to go.
Okay.
And then I was like, yeah, that's fine.
I fobbed Tavares off.
No, you
yeah,
did.
Yeah, yeah.
I fobbed him off.
But can I ask, because I think a lot of people might not know, what is Jalopnik? Jalopnik?
Mm. Jalopnik was one of the biggest car websites, car blogs in the world. Now, I think, I mean, they still do stuff, but it's kind of a shell of what it used to be. Mm. So we had a lot of really cool writers. You know, they did a lot of like anti-establishment, you know, the usual like Road and Track Car and Driver thing. So they would do stuff like break embargoes because they would get the information from elsewhere that wasn't embargoed. So, and embargoes are basically you have this information about a new car and you can't release it until this date because a manufacturer.
Yeah, boring.
Yeah, won't give you a car if you don't, you know. But they were like, hey, we don't care about that stuff, so we'll just get it when we get it. And they did a lot of this, you know, kind of punk. They're like the punk rock.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Whatever. So, but they all disbanded because, you know, there's no money in that. So, but, you know, I worked with people like Doug DeMuro. You know, that's when kind of I started the YouTube channel. But to answer your question, you know, what I did before Jalopnik is I used to work on cars in my parents' driveway.
Oh.
And my first car was a 1998 Nissan Maxima. And the first thing I did on that was I installed two 12-inch subwoofers in the back. And I actually had to call up the company that made the amp to see why it wasn't turning on. And then they told me that I needed a remote wire. And it's basically like a 12-volt source to turn on the amp. And I was like, so what sort of thing is that? How do I do that? So that's the kind of, you know, real in-depth wrenching that I was doing.
Oh yeah.
But the first big thing I did on that car was a manual conversion. There was a tutorial online that was very badly written. And then I got a $30 set of tools from our, you know, local auto parts store and broke half of them, but then still, you know, still made it work. And, you know, parts fell off and I got lots of bonus bolts and whatever, but you make the car work. And then I did an engine swap and blah, blah, blah. I realized that I could do more of that stuff for other people on the forum, like because this was pre-Facebook groups.
Yeah, mad.
Yeah, and then I started doing stuff like that, and I would do like full suspension, like coilover installs for like $80.
Wow.
You know, and that was, and I was like, wow, okay, well, people really line up for that, like, yeah, because I'm not charging anything. Yeah. And I would do you know, full engine swaps for like $600.
Wow.
But it would take me a week, but I said to myself, like, hey, $600, I am loaded.
Yeah, oh yeah.
How am I gonna spend all this money? You know, like, what am I gonna do with all this power?
Did you ever mess up when you were doing any of them? And
oh yeah,
yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, 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 for sure. There was one time I did an engine swap for a guy, and he had an automatic car. And you know, when you put on a torque converter onto the engine, you have to click it in twice, sometimes three times. I didn't know that, so I clicked it in once, put the transmission on it, and it just seized. Like it did not turn. Like I tried to turn the car on, it didn't turn. And I'm like, oh, crap. So I looked it up and apparently I was like, oh, you need to put this in twice or three times. I'm like, oh, crap. And I read all these horror stories about, well, now you just ruined the oil pump in the trans now you need a trans rebuild. And I'm like, crap. So I take off the transmission and then, you know, I reseat it, put everything in. And then thankfully, everything was fine.
Got lucky.
I got so lucky, and the car drove. I mean, we, you know, took it on like a 100-mile road trip just to make sure nothing was bad. And I was like, okay. And then I think at that point, I was like, I don't want to do this.
Yeah. So your journey up to that point was kind of, you were going to be a mechanic. You were going to start your own shop, maybe?
Well, I wanted to do mobile auto repairs and modifications.
Oh, okay.
So it was something where I was going to get a van and a bunch of tools and an air compressor and all that stuff. And I was like, yeah, what if I just did, you know, little jobs for people and I could make money like that. And then I could get more vans. And then, you know, it would, like, in my mind, it would grow exponentially. And then I started thinking about, okay, so what if somebody gets hurt? Mm-hmm. What if I get hurt? What about the liability? What if somebody's doing an oil change where they can't do an oil change because it's not like the place isn't zoned for it, or they mess something up? And then I started going down this rabbit hole, and I'm like, that sounds like a nightmare. That sounds terrible. So then I start looking for, I go, all right, what about the internet? The internet's cool. You know, that's a everybody's on the internet.
Where are we in the YouTube world at that point?
I'm not.
But is YouTube a thing at that point?
YouTube is in its infancy. I think this is like first year of YouTube. It's probably 06.
Okay.
And I think I put a few videos on YouTube just as like, I don't know, here's my car trying to start.
Can we find these videos? Yeah.
Are they still live?
Maybe.
What channel was that?
It was my Tavares channel was 2006.
Yeah. So if we sort by oldest, we might be able to see.
I don't know.
Okay, all right. I may
have privated them because it just doesn't make any sense. But yeah, maybe. So
we're gonna have to do that.
Yeah.
So then I was like, okay, I'm not gonna make any money actually doing this thankless labor work. So then I thought, what if I did, you know, what if I had, like an answering service, you know, where people would ask me mechanical questions and I charge them like $5.
Oh, I thought you were going to be like,
Oh yeah.
Hey there. My name's Teddy. What are you wearing today?
What are you wearing today, Tavares? Do you want to be my friend?
That's not bad.
I know.
That's
right? Not bad. Yeah.
You want to be my friend? I need some friends in my life.
Yeah. No. It was more of like a, you know, ask a mechanic type.
Okay. Yeah.
And then I thought, you know, what's the market for this? Are people like willing to spend money on a question like this? And the answer to that is no.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. Now I'm like that's terrible. But then I thought, what if I just like made a website? And then that website was like a knowledge hub for everything. And I would do like how to's and whatever. And I could arrange them like a cookbook, you know? So let's say you wanted to do a cold air intake on your car.
Mm-hmm.
And then it would be like, all right, first thing, here's what you need. Here's all the tools. Here's supplies. And then every single one of them would be like an Amazon link.
Mm-hmm.
So nice. I'd make money off that.
Yep.
And then if I get people watching, you know, on my site, then I would put ads on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, question marks and then profit, you know,
yep.
Like how do you make that that work?
So was this before the days of where you could just go on YouTube and just there's a video for everything then?
Yes. But the
pre Chris Fix as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Chris Fix might have been just starting.
OK.
But then I thought, you know, OK, I could do this. And like videos would have helped for sure, because then I could just link the video and it would still be a resource. But I could just make money off of like all the stuff that you need. The problem with that is that, I didn't know how to draw in an audience at all.
Mm.
Like, I was like, okay, I made a website. I had to learn how to make a website, made a website as best I could. And then I was like, okay, everyone, please come to my website. What do I do? How does this work? So
you could have used that telephone thing that you could have just phoned everyone up.
What? Hey there, my name's Tavares.
I just wrote his website address in the back of men's toilets.
That's right.
If you want to see me do this, I'm going to be naked for a month.
Sorry, I'm
you know, this I'm this would have been, I mean, OnlyFans honestly would have been a better idea.
Yeah.
You know, I would have been a way more direct path.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just sell feet pics or something. That would have been like, yeah, that's how I got
Have you got sexy feet?
But you know what? It doesn't matter because on the internet, there's something for everyone.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Little something for everyone. 9 out of 10. So I decided to do, this thing, this marketing campaign, and the marketing campaign consisted of me joining 400 Facebook groups. And this is when groups just started.
Wow.
So when forums kind of phased out and Facebook groups started, yeah. I joined every single car group I could all over the world.
Wow.
And I copy and pasted all, like I used to write articles about on my own site about the cars I used to buy and flip. And, you know, not unlike, you know, the stuff you do. So I buy them crappy, modify them a little bit, fix them up and then flip them. Sometimes I would make a profit and most of the time I didn't. But, you know, I was watching, you know, Mike Brewer on Real Dealers and I could do that. And it turns out I can't. So I would write articles and then you know I would post them on these Facebook groups, and I remember after one article I got like 1,000 views, and I'm like, holy shit, I'm like, that is crazy. So like I never understood how you can get, you know, thousands and thousands of views And I'm like, that's great, but like, am I going to have to repost this? Like, what happens? Yeah, yeah. Like, how is this sustainable?
Yeah.
So then I found out that Jalopnik was, it had this open forum called Opposite Lock.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. And Opposite Lock, anybody could post anything, if you're a member. So I just became a member. And then I started posting my articles. And then my article got shared to the front page of Jalopnik.
Oh, made it.
Yeah. And overnight, it got like 60,000 views. I'm like, holy crap.
Yeah.
Like, that is nuts. And then, and then those views, like some of them trickled down to my site. And I'm like, dude, this is awesome. And then I looked at my AdSense and I made like a dollar.
Yeah, I was going to say, are you monetizing this?
Yeah. I monetized it, but I had no idea how that worked. Yeah. Like, I was just like, yeah, I'm going to put an ad here and here. That looks like good placement.
Yeah.
Made a dollar off like 60,000. Yeah. So after that, you know, I wrote a open letter to the editor in chief of Jalopnik, who was Matt Hardegree at the time. And you know, I said, hey, you don't have anything like what I'm doing on your site. I would love to be just a part of this. I don't care about money or whatever. I just want to be a part of this. Because at this time I was living with my parents. And like 2 weeks later, he sent me an email. He said, hey, we actually have like a little bit of a budget. Would you like to be a part of it? And it was like $500 a month. And I was like, hell yeah.
That's cool.
I want to be a part of this. So I became like a contributor to Jalopnik. And I would write like every day. And I would write about, you know, you can buy a, you know, Mercedes S-Class for the price of a Honda Civic, you know, that sort of thing. And that really took off. So that would get like 100,000 views.
Jeez.
And what's really cool is that even though it's like, you know, I didn't get much money for it, I should have been paying them, because what it showed me was that how to form an audience, how to engage with that audience, what titles worked, what people wanted to see. And it's like, people go to school for that and they pay a lot of money. And I was actually getting paid on top of that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, that's like, this is unfair. Because now you have the command of like, you know, essentially hundreds of thousands or millions of people sometimes.
Yep.
And you're also in this world. I mean, you were in the automotive journalist, you know, world. Like, you're in this world with like, now you have access to these crazy experiences.
Yeah.
Like, you have access to all these people, you know, CEOs of car companies and, you know, these cars you just dream about. And now I, you know, me, you know, doing stuff with my, in my parents' driveway, I was now in that world from, you know, writing about my crappy cars.
Yeah.
So that's how I got into Jalopnik. And then, you know, from there I started YouTube because Doug DeMuro had been doing it for a little while. And I just decided, I'm like, hey, if he could do it, then I could do
it. So this was a side gig? Did you ever think that YouTube would take off? Or what, were you kind of honed in on Jalopnik more?
So Jalopnik was a stepping stone. I never thought that it would actually be, you know, like a full-time job. Mm-hmm. I got like, I think a year or so in, I got an offer to be like a staff writer. It was more like, I don't think it was like an official offer, but they said, hey, if you ever want to be a staff writer, just like we can make that happen. But a staff writer was making, I think, like $60,000 or something, you know, a year, which was, I mean,
it's a lot more than in the UK.
It's a lot more. It's a lot of money for somebody that sits in an air conditioned office and then just writes car blogs all day. You know, like, that's not bad money.
Yeah.
But I was like, yeah, well, I kind of like the freedom that I get from just being a freelancer. Cause I don't want to be like, well, they can tell me what to do and whatever. Like, with a freelancer, I could just be like, well, you know what? I'm not doing anything today. So I like that. Then I started getting into YouTube. YouTube started paying the bills a little more. And then, you know, I also moved out of my parents', house, and then we moved to Florida. So YouTube kind of became, you know, YouTube was my full-time job. And then after that, then I had to, you know, do a lot of stuff with these not super exotic cars, but like just cars that challenged me enough and people could see that I'm being challenged. And then that's when everything kind of, you know, started creeping upwards in terms of success.
Yeah, because I would say the first time I heard of you, and it was when you bought that twin turbo Lamborghini.
Yeah.
And I think that's when your channel grew massive from that, just in a few weeks, wasn't it, from that?
Yeah, in like 2 months it went from like 150k subscribers to like 550. And it was,
we're still waiting for that, aren't we?
Yeah. Well, to be fair, especially back then as well, that growth is that was massive.
So what I noticed from that, because I think I was the first person to really do like a a exotic rebuild. And then that year, or like within a year, everyone had an exotic car rebuild. Like, yep, they were like, yeah, all right, we're going to go into Copart and whatever. And people had been doing some like Copart rebuilds, but they had like varying levels of success. But that's the first one that really took off, like in a big way. And every single one, I mean, like I was struggling to get 100,000 views on my videos for a very long time. It was very hit or miss. 100,000 view video was like, oh my God, that's a really good, really good day. And these videos were doing 300,000-400,000 easy. Wait, just like, yeah, you know, right off the bat. The first one got like, you know, a few million. Jeez. And I'm like, oh my God, this is great. And like, I had no idea what, you know, how many ads to put in or whatever, like what good monetization was. But I was just like, okay, we have to keep this going. And then I ended up like burning out because I tried to do, you know, one video, like basically 5 videos a week on this. And like I was just
5 videos a week?
Well, I had to keep the train going. Jeez.
And I think something that a lot of people don't know about you, Freddie, as well, you are a one-man band mostly. You have a bit of help on the mechanics and all this stuff.
Yeah.
But the video side of things is...
Film and edit yourself.
Yeah, yeah. I film and edit everything myself, yeah.
Yeah, which is...
I don't.
Is mental.
I'm too lazy. I'm not lazy. I work very hard, but you must work, like, you must just not sleep.
Sleep is a fun thing. It's a fun, you know, I'll think about that maybe, you know, in the future.
I get really cranky if I don't sleep. Are you not like that?
Oh, I'm cranky all the time. That's my secret.
Okay. Yeah. That's your USP.
I have a resting bitch face. I mean, it takes a toll for sure. What I think of is when I do any sort of editing on my own, I realize that you have a lot of storytelling in the edit.
Yeah.
And I want to be in charge of that storytelling. I'm not a big fan of having other people do the edit because then you have notes that you have to do. Like, all right, how many notes passes are we going to do? And am I micromanaging too much? And then like, all right, is this person getting paid enough? Or like, is this person have the same vision as me? And then, you know, can they save a bad bit? Like if I'm doing something and I go, that looks like crap. Like, what, you know, can we do anything to it? With editing, there's like lots of different options that you can do. Mm. And I'm also a really big fan of, I need to understand a thing in order to like really, I understand how to edit. So I know what's possible and what isn't.
Yeah.
If I tell an editor like, oh, can you just make my face not look like that? You know, like they're going to be like, What are you talking about? Yeah, like, I don't know what that means. Like, yeah, it just looks a little weird. You know, like, okay, well.
So you have a self-image problem.
A self-image, yeah. It's like, yeah, you might want to go to therapy for that, yeah. So
sorry, Freddie, what you're saying is that I don't actually need anyone. I can just do this.
No, that's not what you're saying.
Where's the off button?
You stop this right now.
So who owns these cameras?
I think I own that one. Do I own
you,
that one?
You own,
well, that's the only one we need.
You,
that, that's,
you
that's
own
good.
One of them, and then
I'm having that
everything one. Else is pretty much me.
Okay, I'll do it on an iPhone.
Yeah, you know, they sell...
I don't have an iPhone. No. I need to buy an iPhone.
They sell these lights to, you know, you can just buy them. You know that, right?
Oh, these lights aren't this.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there you go.
So what?
No.
Just sack them off?
You're a real nice guy, man.
Yeah.
To be fair, I don't even do the editing anymore as well. That's a whole other person.
Do you have you have a team of people, don't
we
you?
We have a team of people, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, not we. I have a team of people because it's just me now. It's just me.
I mean, you're Mr. Beast over here. You just do you have a person that just follows you around and just makes decisions for you because you're too busy to make decisions?
That would be me.
Are you the shadow?
Yeah, that is me.
Rory is actually my work wife.
Okay.
Yeah.
Isn't that right, darling?
Yeah, because he's so unorganized that he just can't. So I'm going to say this, actually. I don't care.
Oh,
we had a bill come through today.
I've been very busy.
Which Alex has just... So we moved into this unit 3 months ago and he's just ignored a letter that just came through.
I just didn't see it.
Yeah, and then he's ignored another one. And then basically we've got a threat of debt collectors to come for the for the electricity bill. Because
it's just a threat.
He completely forgot to even sign it up.
Oh,
so I managed to get that sorted today.
Good.
Yeah, well done. I'll treat you nice later.
Oh, go on, yeah.
So fun fact, I have a shop. I mean, I have a second shop. And I have, to this day, I think I've been there for a year. I have, to this day, not hooked up the water.
Oh,
what?
But the water is...
Still running?
It's still running.
Okay, interesting.
So somebody's paying for it.
Yeah, okay.
It's not me. Okay. I don't... So you have the electricity paid for.
Where is a shop we can just send this to America? We'll package this up to America and we'll
yeah, can you? Well, I mean, if you want free water, just hook up a really long hose.
The Copart stuff blew up for you. And also what Pimp My Ride stuff blew up for you, didn't it?
Yeah, the Pimp My Ride van was interesting. So I bought a Pimp My Ride van that was featured in one of the episodes. It was a pink and purple minivan. It's a Dodge Voyager, Plymouth Voyager Expresso. And this van cost me $850.
Yeah.
And I thought that everyone would be super interested in it on the YouTube front, but it was up for sale for like 4 months.
Oh, wow.
There had been like multiple articles written on it, like Road and Track, Jalopnik, The Drive.
One bought it.
No one bought it. And like, I just called them up and I said, hey, is this van for sale? Like, yep, still for sale. I'm like, I will give you money right now.
Yeah.
He's like, I will give you above asking price if you want.
Ooh.
And I had the van delivered to me. I did like three videos on it, and the first video, it did well. Like it did pretty well. But then the second video did number one on trending, and it was doing something like, this was 2019, I think, Christmas of 2019. And it was doing like almost 500,000 views per hour. Yeah.
What?
Per hour.
Is that even a thing?
It is.
Oh,
yeah. That's like, you know. That would be a bad day for Mr. Beast right now, but like it's still
half
like,
a million an hour.
Yeah, so I think all three videos got like something like 23 million views, and it was crazy because I never got anything like that. It was, you know, especially being number one on trending like Christmas. I was like, holy crap, this is great. Yeah,
yeah. That has to be the highest like return of investment.
Oh yeah,
that you've ever bought, isn't it? Really?
Oh yeah. So that van. I mean, we don't have to really talk about numbers, you know, in the grand scheme of things, but like that van made me like $200,000. Yeah.
That's just ad revenue. Was that sponsored by?
It was sponsored. Well? It was sponsored. Okay. So it had like, there was a sponsor on it too, it was quite lucrative to get an $850.
And that's how you make money on YouTube.
Yeah. And, but I remember I talked to, Mr. Beast's manager like about a year ago. I think he called me up because he wanted to get more information about the car space.
Yeah,
I think he represents some other car YouTubers, and you know, he looked at my channel and he was like, hey, you should do more of these, like, you know, like these Pimp My Ride things, like, because it got a really good return. I'm like, you don't think that every day that I do a YouTube video is like, I'm not trying to chase that same thing.
Yeah.
It's like, if I could do that every day, I would. It doesn't work like that. It's like, it's like lightning in a bottle, because
it's hit and miss sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah. And what's interesting is that after the Pimp My Ride van happened, a lot of other Pimp My Ride like contestants or people who own the cars, they came out to me and they said, hey, I want to sell the car. And then I go, how much? And they go, $75,000.
Oh,
I'm like, yeah. I'm not paying $75,000 for your escort. Like,
Yeah.
So, you know, if it was, I think it's just because the story was this car was forgotten, and now I got it so everything in it works.
Yeah.
We cleaned it up, and now it's, you know, repimping the pimp.
Yeah,
pimp ride.
Yeah.
And now the car is at the Peterson Automotive Museum. So.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
That is so cool. So what are your YouTube numbers now, like stats, subscribers, views and everything? Because you are like, what, top five probably car YouTubers in the world? Is that right?
I don't know. I mean, there's people who are a lot bigger than me. So I have 2.6 million subscribers. I haven't posted. So this is kind of like a down month for me because I really hadn't posted. I only posted like one video last month on the P1. So I think I have.
And that just sees you through for the month, right?
It does. But I mean, if I could do four videos a month on that car, I'd probably get like 12 million views or a little more than that.
I take it it's not as easy though with that car because there's so much behind the scenes that's probably going on.
Yeah, it's a lot because it's a lot of problem solving, parts buying, talking to people, and then actually doing the work. And then, you know, it everything takes time.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's really funny. In the last, one of my last videos, we went to Goodwood. So I recorded with the Lanzante cars who make, you know, a bunch of custom P1s.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah.
So I recorded with those. I had, some carbon fiber work, like, carbon fiber repair work done. I, recorded with the people that are doing my custom body for the P1. We fit that up. So there's that. We did some, and then I flew to Chicago to do, to take apart the engine. And then like some people are complaining is like, oh, well, you didn't do anything in this episode. I'm like, dude, I flew like 6,000 miles.
Yeah.
It's like, I had to go to so many, like just to record one video. And I'm like, oh, you didn't do it. Like, what exactly do you think I need to do? It's like, what is a good video for you?
Why is it not started? Why is it not doing 200?
Yeah, it's like, why are you not this thing should be done in 45 minutes.
Indeed, you know? Yeah.
Like
it's because TikTok, it's ruined everyone's lives.
I don't think it's TikTok. I think it might have been, you know, like the overhauling or Fast and Loud or whatever. It's like, we got this car from the junkyard, needs to go to SEMA tomorrow. You know, like we're gonna lose the shop.
Like that's that, good. I like that.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, it's that sort of like everything is done in an hour, and look how far the car has come. Like,
yeah.
Right. But here's the thing. Those are lies. Like they're not actually doing that. So like in a real car build, especially when you don't know what you're doing, like I don't. Then you have to solve a bunch of problems, and you have to be really creative, because it's not like I could just go down to the store and buy McLaren parts.
Yep.
So even McLaren doesn't have parts for that car. Jeez. And if they do, they're crazy expensive. Yeah, like the rear clamshell is $130,000.
Jesus Christ!
You know that just the bodywork alone. You know
that's half the van money.
Yeah, each door, just the door skin is $82,000.
Wow!
What?
Each
so
one.
How yeah. deep are you in?
Currently. I'm actually not that bad.
Good.
Okay. So I've been really creative. Like I'd be surprised if I was like $100,000 into it.
Okay. Is that including buying? No, that's just
no. The buying is one thing. Yeah. But I'm saying $100,000 on top of that.
Yeah. But then you'll have a P1 for I don't know, $500,000 or so.
Well, it would be like 700, something like that.
But then you've got a £2 million hypercar.
Well, yeah,
you'll never sell.
Well, no, I'll never sell it. And what I want to do with it is also quite a lofty goal. So I always thought the P1 was a spiritual successor to the F1. Mm-hmm. And I want that car to be the fastest McLaren in the world, meaning in top speed.
Okay.
So, you know,
this
right,
is news.
So have you released how you're planning to do that yet?
Yeah. I put it in one of my videos. So we're calling it the P1 Evo. And the car is going to have, the engine is going to make somewhere north of like 1300 horsepower.
But you won't have hybrid anymore, will you?
So I don't know yet. Okay. I've been really, doing the pros and cons sort of Venn diagram here. And I really don't know because that car has a hybrid system that's unlike any other. It has a bespoke battery that, you know, if you were to go to McLaren and they even had it, it's $160,000.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's for 4.7 kilowatt hours. 4.7 kilowatt hours is less than you get in one Tesla cell. And
So you can make up that power in more creative ways like boost.
Right? Yeah, you can. So if you took that away, not only could you make that power if you built the engine and, you know, added boost and whatever, but it also reduces weight. Mm-hmm. And reducing weight in that car would be like now you have a 1300 horsepower car that weighs, you know, well, 2900 pounds would be like, I don't know, like 1200 kilos or something.
About 1300 something.
Yeah. So
that's nothing.
Yeah. So it would literally be like a Koenigsegg 1-to-1 or like, you know, something like that. And I think that's doable. But then, you know, is that the soul of the car? You know, cause the car was like, you know, the hybrid, the hypercar, Holy Trinity, blah, blah. And then, you know, comes the whole integration side of things. Like, how can I make that work? Cause no other P1 is like that.
Yeah.
You know, the car doesn't have a starter. You know, there's no starter in it.
Oh.
So, you know, the electric motor drove everything. So it doesn't have an alternator, no starter, nothing. So you'd have to get a different block. Like there's a lot of geeky stuff. Like the wiring harness is different. The car doesn't know that it doesn't have a hybrid system. So how do you fool it into doing that? Has this crazy hydraulic system where, you know, the wing goes up and it does the air brake thing. And it does like, it has all these modes and race mode. Yeah, it's pretty nuts and it's never been done before. But that's why I like it, because it's a challenge.
Yeah.
And but at least with that, you know, if I don't have a hybrid system, that's a challenge that I can kind of wrap my head around. Mm-hmm. But if I have to make a battery, one thing is like, I don't know enough about batteries that I could trust someone else to make this battery and then not worry about electrical fire.
Gotcha.
Or like, you know, the way it dissipates its energy or the way it heats up or whatever. Like, there's so many unknowns there, and it would just drive me crazy.
Fair enough. So you're chasing top speed.
Yeah.
What's your goal?
260 plus.
Fuck.
Yeah.
So like plus. Veyron, Chiron sort of.
Yeah. So the fastest car at that time was the Veyron Supersport.
Yep.
And I think that did like 267. I mean, it doesn't have to beat that. I just want it to be faster than the Speedtail, which is 250.
Do you want to be driving it?
No.
And okay. Does it have to survive after you've done it?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah. So I want it to be
you
like,
can't just
like
put a bit of nitrous in and just go whoosh.
We could do that. But it's like,
imagine the YouTube series after that. I blew up the world's fastest McLaren.
Yeah. That'd be great. The thing that like, I want this car to look like it came out of McLaren. Like if McLaren had a Skunk Works, a secret AMG Black Division or whatever. I want this car to look like this is what we've been working on, and this is going to be some world beater and whatever. So Mr. Ben Collins has expressed interest in doing this. He said he's down.
I'll be free.
Yeah, you'll be free.
I'm actually as fast as Ben Collins on track. Time was the exact same time as
in his, a different car.
I was in a broken car.
In a different,
it was
his car was broke. Also his car. My was also broken.
I didn't have a clutch.
He nearly
I ran out of clutch.
He nearly rolled that car too.
Yeah, but that was in the intro. Did we keep that in the intro?
No.
So when we were doing intros, we wanted Ben Collins to come in sideways and like lift the handbrake, and the handbrake was really shit. That he overshot it, and he kind of.
The handbrake, it only worked on one side, so he literally just flat spotted one tire.
Yes.
I like that. Also, nobody knew or nobody told him that this was the case.
Yeah,
so we had him keep doing it.
And he was very upset, and he said, Alex, I'd really appreciate it if you didn't put that. Is that a good accent for Ben Collins?
No, it's
he's quite
good.
Posh. He's quite posh. Yes, I'm Ben Collins, racing driver. Yes. Yes, always a bit more like that. Please don't put that in because I'm a very good racing driver and people will think that I'm a bit shit. Please don't do that. So we took it out. But it wasn't because he was shit. It was because the car was shit, because Taylor's car was shit. And it also blew up at 140 miles an hour because the car's shit.
Yeah. But I mean, Ben is like the best guy in the world.
Oh, he's fantastic.
He's so cool.
Yeah, he is really cool.
Yeah.
Got a lot of time for Ben. But yeah, I mean, if I'm throwing my name in the hat as well, you know. Maybe,
okay.
Maybe we talk.
Can you hold down an accelerator pedal until it doesn't?
How far does the seat go forward?
Quite a bit.
Okay, perfect. Quite a bit. I'm in. Yeah.
And you've actually been close to that speed as well, haven't you?
I've done 222 miles now.
That's insane.
Genuinely. On the Autobahn. In the Bugatti Veyron Supersport.
Oh, look at you.
In the world's fastest time at the time.
Oh, you know. That's,
They're pretty cool. I don't like to brag about it.
Yeah. I've never been in a Bugatti before, so, you know.
Yeah, no. Like, when I speak to people, the first thing, my opening line is, how fast have you driven? And if they're like 100, I'll just walk away.
Yeah.
If you haven't done 200 miles an hour, I don't have time for you.
Have you really lived if you haven't done 200 miles an hour?
No, you haven't. No. No one's lived. I'm the only person that's live.
Yeah.
Alive. So anyway, once you have done that, once P1 is done, what then? Or do you not know yet?
Then I can sleep.
You just sleep? Okay.
I can sleep for a while.
Okay, nice. Okay.
I have other projects that I'd like to do. I'm not going to announce them because like there's a few that are up in the air that I think would be really interesting.
Oh no, you can because no one listens to this.
No one listens to this. No, okay.
Top 5 podcasts.
Sorry, top 5 was it?
Yeah,
top 5 podcasts. Yeah, sorry.
Top 5, yeah. There are only 4 podcasts in the UK, by the way.
Ooh.
Yeah, this one.
There's only 4, and we come in number 5. Yeah. Oh shit! So yeah, you got some exciting stuff in your brain that you can't tell us yet.
Yeah.
But for now, P1.
I mean, the P1 is going to be the thing for a while.
Yep.
You know, we're going to try to have it done for SEMA, but like, it's not going to be. You know, completely finished, you know, where we're like setting records or anything. If I can get the car running and driving by SEMA, it's going to look, going to have all the looks and going to have the body done and blah, blah, blah. But if I can have the car running and driving by SEMA, that'll be a big, big deal. And at the time of this recording, we have about 2 months left.
Yeah.
So, okay. And then I'm also good doing luck. Like petrol hedonism and all that stuff. So
you're very busy. You are very, very busy. This podcast is sponsored by Tire Streets UK, where you can get 10% off your tires using the code AutoAlex. We use Tire Streets for all of our cars, and so should you.
I will.
10% off using the code AUTOALEX.
Have you ever come close to giving up on YouTube?
Oh.
No.
No.
Of course. Because like, no, I'm 100% involved.
Because there was some stuff that was going on last year, wasn't there?
Yeah. Quite a bit. So last year was a real sort of eye opener for me in terms of like mental health and who my friends are and, you know, really like why I'm doing the stuff that I'm doing. Because for a while I was just doing this YouTube thing. And I feel like I was coasting a little bit, like creatively. So I was doing the same thing, kind of going through the motions and seeing what people liked. And everything was sort of like, it was like shades of the same thing. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, nothing was a banger, but nothing really,
yeah,
you know.
I totally get that, yeah.
Yeah, everything was like a 5 out of 10. And then you're running yourself ragged, doing everything. And you're like, why am I doing this? My home life wasn't very good. You know, my marriage was falling apart. And yeah, and then like basically after the marriage stuff happened, then I got a new house, and you know I'm with a really good woman now, and like it started to come up on the other end, you know, like where, all right, well now my home life is better. I can come home to something that's not necessarily chaotic, or you know, you have like good communication with your partner. And, you know, that helped quite a bit. And you can like sort of stand back and reevaluate things. So like, why are you doing the things that you're doing? You know, and I'm sure you know this with YouTube, like if you're not even if you're a one man band, but if you're the face of your channel, you have to be the one that steers the ship. Mm-hmm. And then you have to steer it. You know, sometimes you steer it wrong and you're like, I don't know what's going on. It's just rudderless. So, you know, that made me acutely aware of like my mental health and realizing that like, even if I'm doing something and I'm successful at it, or like I have, you know, millions of subscribers or whatever, like I can still be very unhappy or like very, I can have anxiety. I can have panic attacks. I can just like have these, you know, existential crises. And yeah, it sounds like, oh, woe is me. I have to make, you know, stupid YouTube videos on the internet for a living. But it's like, it also is work. It's a lot of work.
So you did have anxiety and panic attacks?
Oh, absolutely.
All of these things?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
What for you, sorry to dig up dirt, but what for you does anxiety and a panic attack look like? Like, are you crippled? Do you have to like sit in a dark room for half a day? I mean, what was it like for you?
So with general anxiety, I always felt unease, like something is like the shoe is about to drop, you know, the other shoe is about to drop. And even if everything was fine, like, you know, you go outside, birds are chirping, you know, it's a nice sunny day, but you're like, oh, crap, something's going to happen. Like it's just something. And then you start fixating on something negative. And what's interesting is that something negative always happens. Like, oh, the dog shit on the carpet. Like, of course, you know? And then like, you just, and it could be something small, but it could be something big. And then you go, oh, of course that happens, you know, like, and then you just stew in your own negativity. And it's super unhealthy, like, cause if you don't have an outlet for it anywhere else, or you can't talk to somebody, like talking to somebody really helps, then that happens. And then when that starts getting overwhelming, you know, you can like, I had panic attacks when, and like it was never like, all right, it's going to happen. It was always kind of like random. You know, I'd be sitting in my room and then I'd just be like, I just can't, like, I can't breathe. I just feel like I need to, like, it's almost like I got to jump out of my own skin. Like, I just can't be here right now, you know? And that, like, I've never had that before. And it's such a, like, a visceral feeling, but it's a feeling of helplessness. And then it's almost like, to me, it's like, you know, if you have a really bad stomach ache and you need to like throw up.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, if I just throw up, then I'm going to feel better. But then you puke and then you just feel worse. You know? Yeah, yeah. And you're like, okay, well, I'm just going to be miserable. Like that's, yeah, that's it. Like there's no end. Cause so it's like a repeating pattern of negativity in your head that you can't get out of. So you need to really like work on yourself and you know, be mindful of like what's actually going on in your head. Mm-hmm. Like I have this theory that a lot of YouTubers, especially in the car space, they all have like ADHD because they're, you know.
Oh my God. 100%. This is we have this exact same discussion.
Well, I mean, that's like, I have 30 cars. Like, look how many cars you have. Like, cause you're always chasing something else. You know, you're always like, you know, squirrel. Like, this could be cool. This could be cool.
Yeah.
But like, one really good thing about that, and like, and I know a lot of people suffer from ADHD and whatever. One good thing about it is that you tend not to say no to new experiences and new opportunities.
Yeah, that's why we're very busy all the time.
Exactly. So like, it's great if you have some sort of success, then it just starts taking off. But the thing is, like, you also become a slave to that success.
Yeah.
And then you go like, I'm not doing enough. I need to be doing more. Yeah. And then your body's like, hey man, you need to stop, because we need we gotta stop this.
This is for both of you. Do you think people underestimate like the amount of stress that goes into YouTube and like trying to give people the best content and everything like this? Like, do you think that goes overlooked sometimes?
Without sounding, you know, like woe is me.
Yeah.
Because this, I'm going to preface this by saying that this job, this thing, this weird thing that we do is a total dream. Like, I never could imagine that I could make a living, and a good living, by the way, you know, just putting out content about cars that I love.
Yeah.
Like, when I'm not doing anything, like, I'll watch car videos. I'll watch your videos. I'll watch everybody else. Like, this is like the stuff that I love to do. So I'm not a subscriber to the idea that, you know, you could, if you love what you do, you don't work a day in your life. Like, it's work. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
But I think when you have, you know, a sense of like, you'd have to be a workaholic to do this. Mm. And, you know, for me, it doesn't feel like it's a lot of work so much as like, this is what I need to do to succeed. And the challenge is whether I can do that without like burning myself out. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say for me, what does stress look like? Yeah, I would say this job is very stressful. Not the filming part, because I have a lot of fun filming. It's, you know, like, I love doing shows, car shows.
Yeah.
You know, like, Shed Festival was incredible. But I worry so much, is this going to be as successful? Are people going to like it? Am I going to let people down? For me, it's like,
yeah.
Am I going to, are people going to be disappointed? Or people hold me and you in such high regard when they meet me in real life, or when they see me on stage, am I going to be a disappointment?
Right.
And for me, that is the most stressful thing.
Yeah.
And also, I don't know about you, Freddie, but I try and read through as many comments as I can.
Yes.
I really shouldn't do that, because there are so many comments. But 99.9% of those comments are overwhelming love. I love what you guys are doing, blah, blah, blah. And you see that one person,
uh-huh,
and you fixate on that. Mm-hmm. And it just sits with me. And I just think about it over and over and over and over again. And that's what stresses me out.
It's because it attacks some insecurity you have about yourself.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, well, I guess that's what people think of me. Like, they know.
Yeah,
they
forget all the good. It's lose sight of what you're actually doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, not only just entertaining people, but improving people's mental health.
Yeah.
Like, you know, yesterday at Shedfest, so many people came up and said, I was in hospital. You know, watching your videos got me through really dark times. And it's just like, it's a reality. It's a like wake up call. Yeah. It's like, this is why I do it. Why do I fixate on stuff like that? And it's
the thing is, I mean, that's also how you get better, because if there's, you know, if there's a thread in there, or there's like sort of a consensus of a lot of people that are saying the same thing, it's like, okay, maybe the problem is me, you know, but then, you know, you tend to fixate on like, I want to be everything for everybody. And you can't do that.
Yes.
The thing that I do is I have imposter syndrome. Every time I go to some place, or, you know, some person comes up to me and they say, hey, you know, you're like, you inspired me to do this. And like, in my head, I'm like, dude, there is nothing that I can say to you to make this conversation worth it for you. Like, I can take a picture with you. I can sign something. We can chat, whatever. But it's like, I'm just a guy. And like, I don't know, to like, you've built me up in your own head as this person that I'm not. And that's, and even like, I tend to downplay whatever accomplishments I have, Like when you say, "Oh yeah, you're one of the biggest whatever," I'm like, "Dude, I'm nah, I don't think that's true." You know, so it's a good, I guess it's a good thing because, you know, you end up maybe being a little humble more, or at least you come off a little more humble. But also it's like, I've never sat back, and this is a bit of self-reflection, but I've never really sat back and said, "Hey, I accomplished this thing that was really cool."
Yeah, I'm 100% with that, with you on that.
Yeah.
Like,
it never feels like anything, right?
Yeah, you know, it doesn't until someone pulls me back, like Matt Woods, the first Matt Wood we did.
Yeah.
I was so in the moment. And then I think it was either you or Taylor or Rianne pulled me back and said, "Look what you guys have done." Yeah. And I was like, for a second, I was like, "Holy shit, like this is the most incredible thing we've ever done."
Mm-hmm.
And yesterday as well, I think it was Taylor pulled me back on stage and said, "Look at all of these people. They're all here for you and your team."
Yep.
And I was like, mental. I just don't get it.
No.
I just don't get it. But I'm so thankful. But like you, when people come up to me and say, "You're my idol," blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, but why?
Exactly. It's like, you know, there are other people in the world, right? Like there's way more people than that. Yeah. That's something I don't understand. And I think that's also a trait, you know, that happens with people that kind of come from nothing, where they go, you know, this is just what I have to do. And like getting some sort of success is like, that's great, but maybe it's a thing where, you know, we make videos with a camera, you know, like it's you and maybe a few other people. But you're not performing for thousands of people. Mm-hmm. You know, if you were out on tour and your job was to perform in front of 1,000 people, then you'd be like, okay, I sort of get it. Or if you're like, I don't know, on a TV show with a studio audience, or like you're a movie star and there's like, you know, 1,000 crew and they're all clapping when they do, you know, like that's one thing, but like—
That's validating.
Yeah, exactly. But like I have a camera and I do a bit and then I go home and then I edit it, I put it out, and then the numbers on my screen, like for views, go up, and then that's it.
Yeah.
And I get comments and I make money, and it's all like make believe in my mind.
Yeah.
And then it becomes real when you go to Shedfest, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
But that's the mental thing, isn't it? Shedfest was 5,000 people, and that was mind blowing for all of us. I think that was mental.
I mean, you had people queuing up wanting to speak to you, pictures, autographs as well.
Yeah. Well, that's completely mental for me. I'm not used to this sort of experience. I've spent 5 years behind the camera, not used to the limelight at all.
I've dragged you kicking and screaming, haven't I?
You have, yeah. It has been an interesting experience.
It's been good fun.
Yeah, no, it's been fun.
You're doing a good job.
Oh, well, thank you very much. But yeah, no, it's a crazy world. But yeah, it's 5,000 people at Shedfest, but you're talking your videos or something like that, where you're getting 2 million.
Yeah.
Imagine 2 million people
right.
In a massive warehouse, mm-hmm. staring at you. Like it is, yeah. That would just be mental.
It's insane. And like, if you think about it, if you did a video and it got 5,000 views, you'd consider quitting.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. But those people are like, you know, diehard fans.
Yeah.
So it just puts everything into perspective. It's like 5,000 people. It's like, I told you, I'm like, dude, that's 1% of your, that's less than 1% of your subscriber base.
Yeah.
So, you know, the vast majority, you know, like you could lose 5,000 people and not even know it.
Yeah.
So
please don't unsubscribe.
No.
I'd love to keep you.
It puts it into perspective, everything that we just do. And then when people are just coming up and saying all of, you know, love the videos, love everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It means so much. It really does.
Yeah. But again, like for me, I don't know if you'd noticed, I've been rubbing my eyes loads. I am so tired. I've had no time for self-reflection. I haven't posted anything because I haven't had time. Mm-hmm. And I'm just looking forward to tomorrow, just like looking through pictures, through messages, and then just to say, like, self-validation. It's like, dude, we did it.
Yeah.
We put on a really cool car show. We got amazing people. We got Freddie. We got Mike Brewer to come along. Mm-hmm. It's just like, yeah. It's
on his birthday.
On his birthday. On his birthday. Well. Yeah.
You know, right after he did another show, and his voice was, you know, he was losing his voice and everything. He was super.
Absolutely mad.
Like that's another thing. And, you know, that is crazy. Cause you know, one of those people, like, so let's say you have a video that does 500,000 views. Like one of those people that are watching is Mike Brewer. Yeah. You know, yes. Like, that's nuts.
He's on the toilet while he's doing it. While
it's fine. I don't care.
I will take that all day long.
Absolutely. Yeah. But like, your reach is crazy. Like, it's so much more than you can imagine.
Yeah.
And you don't have you don't have any control of how people consume your content. So I told this to my friend Jack, who just started a YouTube channel. I'm like, you're getting 100,000 views on your videos. Like, there are people right now that are falling asleep to the sound of your voice, and you don't know who they are.
Yeah.
It's like, that is a level of intimacy you were not prepared for.
Do they all sound like this? Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, not this again. No.
And on that note, shall we move on to the third topic?
Yep. So this is, again, for both of you. Have you thought about what life looks like after YouTube?
Oh.
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah?
All the time, yeah.
I haven't. I'm still in that kind of honeymoon period.
Well, I mean, honeymoon is great. And I think, you know, for both of us, we're going to do this until the wheels fall off.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And I don't know when that
happens. Oh, don't say wheels fall off. All my cars are crap.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. Even when the wheels fall off, you put them back on and you keep going.
Yeah, that's true.
But the thing with, you know, like in business, there's a concept called exit strategy. So like what's your, and you do this like preferably before you start the business, or like, you know, while you're in the infancy phase, is like, what are we looking for? Is this going to be our baby? Are we going to, you know, die with this thing? Or are we going to build this up to a certain point and then try to sell it? With the YouTube channel, that is your name, Otto Alex or Tavarish.
Yep.
I don't know if you sell that to anybody.
No, we're screwed.
We are screwed because
you guys messed up.
Our exit strategy is zero. But like, if you're somebody like, you know, Donut, you know, Donut could be anybody.
Yeah.
You know, so Donut, Hoonigan, VinWiki or whatever. Like they are. That's, you know, as far as a business, that's a really good idea. Mm. So I think the idea, you know, the thing you need to do is get your money out of YouTube while you still have, you know, the command of, you know, hundreds of thousands of people. And, you know, you can do that through merch, you can do that through different business dealings and all that stuff. And and then let's say if YouTube goes, you know, dark tomorrow, you know, you have something to fall back on. But let's just say you want to keep going, but YouTube is dead.
Yeah.
People still want to consume content, and you still, like, people still know who you are. You still have all your connections. You still have everything. Like, people aren't going to want to just not consume content anymore. So whatever the new platform is, the same way you learned how to do stuff on YouTube, you can learn how to do on a new platform. So I don't really worry about the, you know, what happens when YouTube just puts on its brakes. Like, I don't really care, because something else is going to pop up anyway.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I haven't even thought of like exit strategy or anything like that, because I didn't think that the channel was going to blow up quite like it did.
No.
I said it last week, it was always supposed to be a side hustle.
Yeah, and I mean, you've only, this is all new to you as well.
Like, this is all very new.
You've had 10 years of employment working for a company.
Yeah, and now I am the employee, which is mental. And I always said, I don't want to be anyone's boss or manage anyone, because I'm just crap at it. You will agree with
you
that.
I'm just crap. You are awful.
I can't even pay bills, can I?
No, you can't.
You had to pay the, what, gas bill or electricity bill today.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are just giant babies.
Like, we are just giant ADHD babies. Mm-hmm. But yeah, for what does life after YouTube for me look like? I don't know. I mean, TV for me was always the one thing that I wanted to get into, but now that
it's weird that people do that, you know, like, yeah. it's so odd.
But that was
it?
Like pre YouTube, wasn't it? Like, I always grew up when I was a 15-year-old. I spoke to my one of my best friends, Chris, who's like, I do the merch thing. And I said, as a 15-year-old, one day, Chris, I'm going to be on Top Gear, which we're actually going to be discussing.
Yeah,
in a wee while. But for me, life after YouTube, I don't know. I really don't know.
So, if today someone offered you, let's say, $5 million for your channel,
okay,
Would you take that and walk away? No,
absolutely not.
That's because his channel is worth way more. Ask me the question, Rory.
Yeah.
Would you?
I'd do it for 500 quid.
No, you would not. No, you would. Well, I guess...
Hold that, Jan. Yeah.
For both of you, though, it isn't... it's not really a job, is it? It's kind of more of a passion project for both of you, really.
It's a bit of both.
Yeah.
It has to be a bit of both. Because,
it's a passion project that pays.
I think... You know, the idea is like everything's for sale, right?
Yeah.
How much that P1?
So
when it's fixed, how much? What's the price?
$10 million.
$10 million?
Oh. $10 million.
Oh. So can we just rewind to when Freddie said, I will never sell that car? And now it's apparently $10 million. Dollars even.
Why do I sound like Sling Blade? Shouldn't have done that. You just
bored. Oh yeah, I'll give you $10 million.
Poor little feller. So, yeah, I mean, it's everything has a price. If somebody, that's a stupid price that nobody would ever pay. That's why.
Anyone stupid enough to pay? I think so.
Okay, well, listen.
I think so.
There's a lot of stupid rich people.
There are.
And,
there are.
Yeah, that want to be insulted just like I insulted them right now. Yeah.
Do you think you guys would be able to get used to, like, say, you retire from YouTube comes to an end? Because both of you are, like, running at 1,000 miles an hour, just trying to catch up, doing everything at a time. Do you think you know what to do with yourselves after you finish?
So that's the thing. I don't think I'll ever stop working.
No?
No, because I think when you stop working, that's when you die. I'm 100% like convinced of this. So like all the old men, actually Always Sunny in Philadelphia had a thing about this. Like Frank, the old guy played by Danny DeVito, he retires. And then he starts like withering away, but it's also because the other people are like literally draining his blood while he's sleeping. And he's like, I'm going to die. But yeah, like people like, especially, not to get to TradCon here, but like, I think men, we need to keep moving. And we need a sense of purpose, and we need to feel like we're useful in some respect. That's why a lot of guys, even when they retire, they go get a job at like, Walmart or whatever as a greeter.
Yeah.
Like they might not need the money, but they just need something to do during the day.
Yeah.
So they take up a hobby or whatever. The people that just sit around and do nothing, dude, they die. Like they just live a purposeless existence, and then they just, that's it. Like that's, oh, okay.
So we're never going to see Freddie on a cruise ship just sailing around the world.
Love cruise ship. I absolutely love cruises.
Do you?
Yeah. Dude,
do you know how polluting those bloody things are?
Aww.
No, genuinely, that's the one thing in this world I hate more than anything.
Have you been on a cruise?
No, I'm out of
practice. You need to go on a cruise, my friend.
5,000 pound cruise challenge. Here it comes.
You need to go on a cruise. Dude, okay. First of all, don't give me crap about polluting. How many cars do you have?
Okay, so one cruise ship pollutes the same amount as all the cars in Europe in a year.
Okay, close. Okay.
Well, it's a lot.
We can get into a debate. The problem with those calculations is that they don't consider the fact that it's not just a transportation thing. Okay, cruises aren't just transportation. So you have to take into account that they're hotels, that they're amusement parks. Like, how much do those pollute? How much energy does that expend? And they're hospitals, they're morgues, they're police stations. Like, they have everything on board. They're desalination plants.
You have a morgue?
Yes, there's a on is every cruise ship.
Is it because they're so shit that people just die because they're
It's because they're full of old people.
It's because they're full of old people.
And who have given up because they've stopped working.
They've stopped working.
They've gone on a cruise.
That's right. So the second you get on a cruise ship, you you start working.
Stop washing dishes.
You find your purpose. I love cruises. Like it's legitimately one of the things I like about it is because since we do this thing and we're going at 1,000 miles an hour, it forces you to stop. And it's like, I can't do anything. It was like, I don't have anything.
You've just
to do.
Told me it's got an amusement park.
Yes.
How are you going to stop and not go to the amusement park?
No, you can, but it's like, it's not that you do nothing. It's that you don't have to do anything.
And the internet is not good enough.
I was going to say, do you have the internet?
Actually, on a lot of cruise ships, they have this thing called Voom, and it's really good. You can.
So you're still uploading when you're on the cruise ship?
Yeah, of course. Because I'm not going to stop working, right? Yeah. What am I, an idiot? No, but you can upload, you can do Netflix, you can do Skype or whatever. But dude, I'm telling you, like, you should take your newlywed, your lovely wife.
I'm not doing it.
On a lovely cruise.
Oh, no. I think Rihanna would love a cruise.
No, I'm going to take an
transatlantic cruise.
Boring.
Dude, you'll love it.
Also, how long do these transatlantic cruises take? Because I can't do more than 12 days on holiday. I literally explode. It's no good. 12 days maximum.
You are even like a little child.
No, even if you go to Australia, Bali, whatever, 12 days, done. I'm out.
Okay, so I used to do 45 days.
Not
on a cruise. That'd be too much. But a cruise would be a part, like the last part of it.
Okay.
So I used to take really big vacations. And this is before my daughter was born. So afterwards, it becomes really hard to travel with a kid. We would do a road trip around Europe. And then from Europe, instead of flying back, we'd take a cruise back. So a transatlantic cruise back. And the transatlantic cruise was like 2 weeks.
A transatlantic pollute back.
A transatlantic pollute back. Yeah. That's right. You should really get into the tech. And like they do a lot for the environment. Like they have
a lot of bad.
Yeah. No, it's actually pretty good.
Okay. It's,
yeah. You want to
Well, do they plant a single tree?
They plant one single tree
for every year.
Yeah. For every year that. There you go.
Yeah, we've done our bit.
So,
how did we get onto cruises? Life after YouTube for Freddie just looks like a big cruise.
No. I'd like to go to cruises, you know, every once in a while, but I haven't been in a very long time.
Maybe you two should go.
We should.
We could go on a cruise.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not going on a cruise.
I'll invite Taylor. He'd like it.
Yeah, Taylor would bloody love a cruise.
He would love a cruise.
He'd be there on top of some sort of bar doing some karaoke somewhere. Yeah. He would love it.
Like a lot of fun, man. Yeah. I don't know why he was such a big stick in the mud right now. Dude, you'd love it.
Can I play Rose?
Yeah, you can.
Oh, okay. Right. I'm in.
Yeah.
Paint me like one of your French girls.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Paint me like one of your French girls.
No. So, one of the things I met Jay Leno a little while back.
Name drop.
Yeah, just by the way.
You have to preface that with a name drop.
Yeah, I just call him Jay, but you know.
Oh, Jay. Hey, Jay.
Yeah. And he's 73 years old, and he has an insane work ethic. Like he still does, multiple videos a week on his Jay Leno's Garage channel. He does tour dates. He does like stand-up comedy.
Wow.
And he was doing when he did the Tonight Show, when he had a live show every night, he was doing 210 dates a year for his stand-up show.
What?
While he was doing that. Yeah, so he was coming up with new material. He was like, he was on the road and doing that.
Jesus.
And then also had to go. And that's on top of like doing whatever promos and doing Jay Leno's Garage, because he's been doing that for like almost 20 years.
And he still finds time to meet you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Mad. And he watches your stuff?
He watched my stuff, which is odd. I'm like, this is not how it works. You know? But like that sort of work ethic is like, I don't worry about, like a person like Jay Leno. He has such a motor where, he, like an internal motor, internal drive, so he got in a really bad motorcycle accident, and then he like burned half his face off in like, the course of 3 months, and he's fine. And he's like, he's totally fine. And I'm like, I don't know any other 73 year old that could happen to. And they didn't immediately die.
Yeah. It's because he didn't go on a cruise.
He didn't go on a cruise. Yeah. He doesn't have anything that pollutes.
That's actually how they met each other, was on a cruise.
Yeah. Oh my God, is that Jay Leno?
Right, Rory, shall we move on to to the fourth and final question? It's a big one.
It is a big one. Okay. All right. If you two got offered the opportunity to host the next generation of Top Gear, would you take it?
I'll start. No.
I was going to say, we're going to say our answers 3, 2, 1.
Sorry, do it again.
Okay. 3.
No.
2.
Sorry.
Try one more time, okay?
Okay.
3, 2.
No. No, I wouldn't do it.
No?
Sorry, I got bored. You're taking too long. No.
Okay. I think you're lying. I think you're absolutely lying.
So what? Another generation? Another iteration?
Yeah.
Of something that just isn't work?
Yeah. Well, That's your opinion that it's not working.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's an opinion that many people hold.
Yeah.
Now, I hold Chris Harris especially in very, very, very high regard, even though he doesn't respond to my phone calls. But
let's call him up right now. Let's call him.
Where's my phone?
Maybe it's because our podcast is rated higher.
Where's my phone?
Yeah.
Where's my phone? Let's call him up.
Let's call Chris Harris.
Where is this your there? Phone?
Yeah, yeah, it's my
phone. Actually, what time is it? It might be really late.
It is 20 past nine.
Okay.
Are you going to ring Chris Harris at 20 past nine on a weekday?
Oh, no, I'm really nervous.
Okay. Now we got to do it.
Okay, yeah.
What are you going to do, though? You ring him, right?
Yeah.
And he picks up.
Yeah.
What if he does pick up?
Oh, no, now I'm really nervous.
Are you literally
just going to
say... You're right, Chris, I'm just on a podcast at the moment. And I was just going to see if you do pick up, because I said that you don't pick up. That's all.
How about we text him?
No, there's no point. Just don't even bother.
Just send him an email.
Just leave it. You've lost it now.
Oh, if it was earlier, I would 100% do it.
Uh-huh.
How about on the next podcast, remind me.
All right.
We'll phone him up.
All right.
We'll phone him up.
Guys, I can fly. I swear. I just don't feel like it right now.
So, what was I saying? Chris Harris is very good. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, but Top Gear is crap and you hate it.
No, I didn't say it was crap. No, I did say that. But I didn't say I hated it. I would say, like, 2-3 years ago, absolutely would have jumped at the chance because I was 7-8 years into Carl Throttle by then, getting a bit of itchy feet. But now, however, you know, we have built Autilex into what it is.
Yep.
I'm super, super proud of what that is. We've got shows opening loads and loads of doors. What if you just dropped there?
I don't know.
Oh, for crying out loud.
I think it was my phone.
Okay.
We just went to number 6.
It's number 7 because we're featuring you.
Yes.
But because the reboot of the reboot didn't really take off. And for me, the shine of TV is just dulled so much to the point where I'm more excited. Genuinely, I'm more excited about doing this and being in control of my own fate and not being told what to do or what to say. And I don't think I could go back to that.
I don't think you'd be able to do it. Even if it was in Top Gear of its heyday and they offered you the job, and I know you'd probably take it back then. I think you may have done a few months of it and realized that you hate it.
Why?
Well, so you are not very organized person. And also I've seen you try and do some script stuff and stuff like that. And then especially when you've got a room full of people.
That was a few years ago.
Do you think it's different now?
Yeah, I think it's different now because I've had more practice. It's all practice.
It really is practice. Yeah. It's not too bad now.
But it's not even the fact that you can't do it. I just don't think you enjoy doing it.
No, I don't enjoy being scripted at all.
No, I know that if you were there trying to, like, where they're on track saying, all right, you need to now say this line, you need to then say that line and then blend into
the thing that I hate most about that is it's not me. It's not spontaneous. So why am I doing it? Why don't you have someone else do it?
Okay.
And then it's like you don't want me for me. You want me for my audience. And that, I can't live with that. I want them to want me for my merits and my skill.
Okay. I can see that. And I guess that's why, you know, Top Gear in its heyday was different than the one now, because now you have the guys that like already have a following somewhere else.
Yeah.
And then they...
100%. Yeah. That's why. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe not so much Chris Harris, because they actually needed a proper car expert, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because he was at the time doing very well on YouTube, but he wasn't known in the cast in the TV space.
No.
He's filled the role very well, though, that they needed that person.
But they tried to script him at the very beginning in such a way that I looked at that and I was like, that's not Chris Harris. And you could tell that I'm speaking for him. I shouldn't, obviously, but to me, it just felt like he is so much more of a serious journalist than having whatever it was on his head and nipple probes and stuff. And I was just like, you're doing him a massive, massive disservice.
Yeah. The thing I didn't like about, you know, like they tried to put a lot of like hokey sort of reality show stuff obviously was so very scripted.
Yeah.
I mean, Grand Tour does this as well. And I think that they're trying to chase that.
Yeah.
But the thing is, if I was asked to do Top Gear, I would take it, like for sure, because it's just to see what that were.
Huh? I'm going to change this. If you take it, you have to end your YouTube channel.
No, I wouldn't do it.
That's part of it, because that would be the agreement you'd have to sign.
Because it wouldn't be, because here's the thing. If they are, first of all, if they're considering me for Top Gear, there's some leeway there, because they are scraping the bottom of the barrel. It's like, I can ask for things, you know. It's like, I want a trailer with only green M&Ms, you know. I would probably negotiate that I would still have a YouTube channel.
But if they said to you, you can only do one video every 2 months.
I mean, maybe, but like, I would have to.
And they have to pre-approve all of your videos.
Oh,
No, of course not. No, but
that would genuinely, in TV industry, mm-hmm. they wouldn't let you, because obviously we're talking about this because we know what is happening with some other people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They wouldn't allow you to do what you're doing.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, everything kind of comes at a cost. So let's say if they paid me $10 million a year, then I would absolutely consider it.
Yeah, but they're not going to do that.
Yeah, I know they're not going to do that.
But be realistic.
That's what I'm saying. So that would probably be my break point, you know? Like, okay. And I would go like, okay, then I guess this isn't for me.
But if they said to you, we'll give you 200 grand for the year and you get to be on TV.
Because, I mean, why would
I? So the only reason you would do it is for the money?
No, I wouldn't do it for the money. It's just I need to have that freedom. And the money allows me to at least understand that I'm not doing this for nothing. Like, I'm not giving up that freedom for nothing.
Yeah.
So there's like, that freedom comes with a cost. So if they want to buy my time, if they want to have the sole exclusive rights to my time, that's going to cost them a lot of money.
Yeah.
And it would have to be, you know, X amount more than I would make on my YouTube channel on my own, just because that freedom costs so much. Like, it's so important to me. But like, let's say if they gave me a $10 million a year contract, you know, that's something where, okay, now I don't have to worry about my family eating for, you know, the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is something where, like, okay, I'll take this hit just for my, you know, like, freedom and career, but at least now everything's taken care of. And now I could figure things out. Like, $10 million a year, let's say you do it for 2 years, that buys you a few years of, like, what am I going to do next? You know?
So it is about the money. If they were to offer you 10 million, you would say yes.
Maybe. Okay. I'd consider it.
Would you not? Because obviously we've seen what's happened now with, has it been 3 iterations since the Clarkson days?
Well, it was the one with Chris Evans.
Yeah.
Right? And then it was
Matt LeBlanc.
Yeah.
But wasn't Chris Evans with Matt LeBlanc?
Well, then he left, and then it was Matt LeBlanc.
Matt LeBlanc and Rory, and then Rory and Chris.
Chris.
Yeah. And then
it's
Flintoff.
Flintoff and the other three. Guy.
So would you not be apprehensive about taking it purely because every single time you're just judged and compared, and, you know, like, it's...
That can't be good for your mental health.
No.
No, but I mean, a YouTube channel isn't good for your mental health either. So,
but you have control of it. You've made it. You're not being cast in something, in an existing beast that you know is going to get loads of hate.
It would be like if you two swapped channels and Tavares was leading the Auto Alex channel.
The Auto Alex channel would do very well.
Well, the world's cheapest P1. I think you'd get hate, but it's also... the idea that you have, you know, at least some sort of control of the franchise that you grew up watching.
But you'd have no control.
If you had no control, I mean, they have some control over what they say, like what they do.
But they're,
like,
still, they are still meat puppets.
Do you think that they don't have any control over what they do?
Well, are within reason.
Yeah.
But they are still scripted to a point. You have to follow this, that.
Sure, but
don't be too spontaneous.
I would say it's 80% production, 20% them.
Okay, I mean, that seems that at that point it's just a prison. So, like, what's the point? I do know that, you know, like, just from doing Car Trek, I like having the freedom of doing whatever, because we get to choose whatever we want to do.
Yeah.
If another person was telling us what to do, like, and we've had some sponsors be like, oh, hey, maybe you could do this, and it's just like a terrible idea. Then we're like, hey, we're not gonna do that. I think the thing that's missing from Top Gear is the fact that the people actually care about cars and the people actually know what they're talking about, and they can string a sentence together. So I don't know. Chris Harris can do all three of those very well.
Yeah.
The other two, I've seen some. I honestly have not seen any episodes with the other two. I don't know if they're good. I don't know if they're bad. But I've seen some clips, and it seems like
they definitely have a passion for cars. But do they live and breathe cars? No.
Yeah, like you need somebody that.
Yeah, they didn't grow up wanting to be Top Gear presenters.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But like the original Top Gear presenters worked so well because one, they had really good chemistry.
Yeah.
So and two, they're all writers. They're all writers and you know, and presenters, and they knew how to craft a story. They knew how to engage the audience. They knew how to convey a certain idea that they had. And it wasn't just like, I remember Chris Evans was on the thing and all he was doing was screaming. He's just screaming. He's like, this is crazy. This is crazy. Like, oh, okay, I understand. I get it. Fast car, fast. I get it. But like, you know, when Clarkson did it, he would say like, oh, this is, you know,
he
this
had
is like
a poetic way of doing
yeah,
it.
Yeah, this is like a small dog. It's like, oh no, dogs don't have wheels. You know, like, stuff like that. Like he would say things that like my brain isn't capable of making that. Yeah, you know,
but the crazy thing is as well, because I looked it up beforehand, so. We're talking about if you took Top Gear, why would you take Top Gear at the moment? Because if we compare numbers,
mm-hmm.
one of your episodes is getting about the same as what Top Gear in its current form, or well, last current form, was getting.
Is it for you the cachet of being on TV? Is that something you've always dreamed of?
It's not the TV. I think it's just Top Gear specifically. If it was some other TV show, I wouldn't give a crap.
But even if the name Top Gear doesn't resonate with people anymore and people don't put that much emphasis on how good it is anymore, you still want that?
I tend to think that Top Gear is still in the back of people's heads, there's a thing where they still want it to do well. Like they still want it to give them that little, you know, Top Gear back in its heyday. Like, oh, I have the same centers in my brain. They're like, oh, I you know, this is really good.
But we have that on YouTube. We do that.
No, I understand. I understand that. But I don't know. I think for me, it would just be like a little, maybe a selfish thrill where it would, you know, be like a feather in the cap.
Like
I was a presenter on Top Gear, even though Top Gear crashed and burned and had, you know, a quarter of the views that my YouTube channel gets, you know?
Yeah. I was going to, obviously, you know, Rory Reed. Is he glad that he did Top Gear? Have you ever spoke about that with him?
I don't know if we've ever
spoken
about it per se. I think it opened a lot of doors for him.
Yeah.
I think it shut up a lot of haters as well.
Yeah.
And
he was also someone that came across very well, I think.
We were speaking about this earlier. Rory Reed, for me, is genuinely my favorite car reviewer.
Yeah.
Because he just oozes cool. He has such a way with words. He's very, very eloquent, and he gets across exactly how a car feels.
Yeah,
in a manner of like small sentences.
Yeah,
he doesn't fluff about.
Yeah, because to be fair, when I was that trio of LeBonc, Rory Reed, and Chris Harris, I feel like the only problem really was Matt LeBlanc. I feel like
hated him on Top Gear.
Really? I'm glad I just didn't think he fit the role at all.
He was terrible.
Yeah.
I think also the fact that we had the lead being an American, no offense to Americans, it just grated.
Yeah.
It didn't sit right because we had, quote unquote, three, you know, British gentlemen.
Yeah.
Our humor is so different
as well.
You could tell some of the things would just go over Matt's head. Like that the other two would do it.
It just seems like, you know, Matt, what for me, it's like I look at him and I go, I could do that.
Mm.
And but like when I look at James May or Richard Hammond or, you know, Jeremy Clarkson, I'm like, I couldn't do that. There are stuff that like they're operating on a level where they've done this so many times that it's like they know when they're doing a bit.
Yep.
They know when to end it. Yep. They know when to cut. They know when to, you know, transition. And it's like they are masters of their craft because they make it look so easy.
Yeah.
And Matt, when he was doing that, you could see that he was like a fish out of water. And he was just like a meat puppet. It seemed like he was a meat puppet. Like he was just like, all right, producers told me to say this, look in this camera, do that. And like, whoa, blah, blah, blah. You know, like, and it just, everything just seemed... They had this artificial haze over it.
It was a bit wooden, quite.
It was very wooden.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's weird because, I mean, he was the most animated character on Friends. You know, he's Joey. He's like, larger than life. And, you know, he's making all these jokes and whatever.
I wonder how he felt being, you know, cast in that position. Is it like, am I here on my merit? Or am I here because I'm Joey?
It was his choice, wasn't it, that he left in the end?
I think it would
I'm guessing that's the answer there, isn't it, really? He wasn't enjoying probably doing it.
Yeah, exactly. And I know he loves, he's a car lover.
Oh, he's a car nut. He's a massive car nut. Yeah.
Yeah, which is weird. But like, I think he was a bad fit for that, because one thing that really is important in that is the three presenters' chemistry.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it boils down to. When you saw, you know, Hammond, Mann, and Clarkson in the cheap Porsches, and, you know, this is 928 that's just leaking. And then, you know, May goes like, hold on, I got to fill mine up with electricity. You know, and like they went, you know, a total of 10 miles, you know, throughout the entire episode. Like that stuff is, you know, that's like legendary. Just because, you know, they're making fun of each other, and then the way the story is told. And, you know, I was talking with you guys about this earlier, like those iconic scenes, they're only like 15 minutes long.
Yeah.
Like in your brain makes them like, oh yeah, it was a whole episode.
It was
like
an epic. Yeah.
It really wasn't. No. Like, you know, those, the races against public transport, like those are like max 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So it's, you know, it stays in your brain about like how they could pace these things and make them feel really, really special without actually taking that much time.
So let me circle back again and be realistic about this. The BBC.
Yep.
Quite stingy, aren't they?
Yeah.
If they were to say to you, Freddie, I mean, what's a realistic budget for a year?
$200,000, I think, would be.
$200,000? Let's even say $300,000 for iteration 4 of Top Gear. Mm-hmm. £300,000.
For how many months of filming?
The whole season.
It's a season.
That's a whole year.
It's a year.
That's realistic. As well.
A year of filming, you get $300,000 for Top Gear?
Yeah, that's how much the current presenters roughly were on, yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
So
it's not like I'm saying $300,000 is not a lot of money. But when you're at that level, when you're at Top Gear BBC level and you're making $300,000, that's insane.
But that's realistic.
Yeah.
Do you take the job?
I would have to have my own YouTube. Like my YouTube channel could not be changed in one bit.
Because I'm correct in thinking, even when it was Clarkson, May and Hammond, I think even in their heydays, they were still only on like a mil. Well, I say only. I think it was like a million something.
Yeah, it was just over a million or something.
Yeah.
Clarkson, yeah, I know, but that's still better than $300,000.
Yeah, but this is Clarkson.
Like, yeah,
and this is when they are the biggest of the big. Yeah. Like,
which is weird because they make a lot more money now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure you make. I'm guessing here, but you make more money, or you can make more money on YouTube in a year.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Exactly. So. Would you still take the job? BBC in the UK, because let's face it, the American one was a bit shit.
I would do the I would honestly do the American one, because it's probably like, that's the one that comes with no stipulations. That's the one that's like, hey man, you know
it
what?
It can only get better.
Like, don't get canceled on Twitter. That's it.
So you would do that? You would still take it?
Maybe.
But, I mean, they would have to have some control over the YouTube.
That's what they did with
Chris Harris.
Yeah. I mean, if they had control of the YouTube channel, I wouldn't do it. If they didn't allow me, if they allowed me full control of my YouTube channel with the stipulation that I couldn't say bad things about Top Gear, then that's fine. I mean, like, there's a
They didn't allow that for Chris Harris.
Okay. Well, you know.
So let's.
Chris Harris is an American. We love to negotiate. Yeah.
So we could have saved a lot of time, because my answer was no, and your answer now is probably no.
Well, it's being no realistic. Asterisk. It's no asterisk.
Unless they pay me $10 million, which is never gonna happen.
Freddie, can't let the dream go. He can't let the dream go.
Okay, okay. How about this? Next Top Gear, it's gonna be me, you, and Rory. That Rory.
No one wants to see that. Rory. I'll be like the little sidekick, sort of. I'll be the Rory Reeves of Generation One of him coming in.
Me, you, and Mike Brewer.
Oh, hold out your hand. I'm in. Rory,
you're
done.
Oh, okay.
Get the hell out.
How long have we been talking for, Rory?
This has been a long one. So I've got an hour and probably 30 something.
Bloody hell. What time? Oh, yeah. It's nearly.
We only got 2.5 hours left. Let's go. Come on. Let's get on the road.
I am so tired.
Yeah. All right. Should we record the next one then now?
Oh, for crying
out. we forgot to record.
So yeah, this has been episode 2 of the Autileaks podcast featuring a major YouTube star. I'm going to validate you. You are a major YouTube star, one of the world's biggest car YouTubers.
Yeah.
You know, I just want to say this again. So he keeps saying he's not one of the biggest car YouTubers. Name another car YouTuber that does everything himself, is on his own, isn't Donut, isn't Car for All, isn't whatever, or any of these massive ones that are big companies. That you are.
Chris Fix.
Matt Armstrong.
Matt Armstrong. But Matt Armstrong has he does have a guy that films for him and edits a second channel. The other Matt. But Matt Armstrong is like, that is a crazy amount of work.
But that is literally, you're in the top three. Sure. You're in the top three, at least.
Maybe.
Yeah, so shut your mouth. All right. Just be grateful. Okay. All right. Just be happy with what you've achieved.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
So yeah. Again, thank you very much for listening. It really does mean a lot to us that, you know, after episode, sorry, I'm really struggling for words here. I'm so tired and very, very dehydrated.
Thank you for listening to episode 2 of the Auto Alex podcast. This subscribe. Has been a great time. We have Auto Alex himself, Alex Kirsten, we have Rory, and we have me, Tavarish.
Can you come back?
Signing off.
Can you do the intro and the outro for all of them from now on? Yeah, but no, it's been fantastic. Thank you very much for the support. It means a lot. We have got... I need to go to bed. I need to drink something. I need to drink a lot of alcohol.
Yeah.
Rory, any other words to round out the podcast? Oh, we have an email address.
Oh, yeah. If you email... I've seen people have already been sending a lot of stuff to the inbox. Put podcast@autoalexcars.com. Send in any sort of questions that you'd like us to answer.
Yep.
We've got future guests coming on, like Armstrong.
Oh, yeah, he said yes.
Yeah.
Mike Brewer said yes.
Yeah, Mike Brewer. Bernie.
Yeah, from Drive Tribe. Mark McCann will have on as well.
Have we asked Rory Reed yet?
No.
Oh. I'm going to say Rory Reed because he's a nice guy.
I actually owe him a text message.
We should do a podcast when we're out the Nürburgring.
We are. Yeah, that's the plan.
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I'm not invited, am I?
A bit awkward, isn't
it? We've already
given him airtime.
Yeah, we have, yeah.
Yeah, he needs to be paying now, doesn't he?
I just...
We will do that.
Okay.
Yeah, with Misha as well. Yeah, very, very exciting times. We are now going to go to bed together. What? Sorry? No, thank you very much for listening. We will see you. No, we won't. We will listen. We will talk to you next time.
Are you right?
I am really struggling. It's been a very long week and it's only Tuesday.
You're okay. It's Tuesday,
innit? It's Tuesday, innit? Yeah.
Innit, bruv?
And with that, let's let Freddie sign out.
Bye. Goodbye.
Goodbye. All right. Okay. We're going to cut it there.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Listen to you. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, Sponsored Jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites.
With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.